a cinematic in terms of like the landscape of television and film, in a landscape where Black actresses still really fucking struggle to get good parts. They struggle. Like, you guys, it's not, I wish it was a joke. It's not. Like, they still very, like, in a landscape where the Viola Davises of the world still very much struggle to get good parts, even though you're Viola fucking Davis. Like, it does feel, it feels squicky. There's, I don't know. Yeah, I'm going to stand on that term. It feels squicky that, like, the first really incredibly written made part is, like, this Nepo, it goes to, like, this Nepo baby white girl actress. That does. That makes me feel a type of way. I have a lot of complicated emotions, as I hope I described. Hello, everyone. This is Alex.
And this is Em.
Welcome to the latest episode of The Good, The Bad, The Basic.
This is a podcast for anyone who enjoys binge-watching new TV series and revisiting old favorites. On this podcast, we'll be discussing what we loved, what we hated, and what's just a bit problematic about the TV and movies that we're addicted to, though not necessarily in that order.
We are officially done with our hiatus. Listen, don't call it a comeback. We've been here for years, and we're starting things up with our latest season, Limited Edition. Limited Edition will be our deep dive into some of the TV and streaming miniseries and limited series, which we've been watching lately.
First up is Made, a 10-episode limited series covering a young, impoverished single mother's struggle to break free from her abusive boyfriend and provide a better life for her daughter. What did we think of this series? Is Made worth watching?
Stay tuned!
Everyone, here are some details about Made. This series is a drama. It is a Netflix exclusive, so it's streaming over there. It was released on October 1st, 2021, and it's inspired by the memoirs of Stephanie Land entitled Made: Hard Work, Low Pay, and a Mother's Will to Survive. The series creator is Molly Smith Metzler. And the series stars Margaret Qualley as Alexandra Russell, a.k.a. Alex, our protagonist, Nick Robinson as Sean Boyd, Alex's on-and-off boyfriend and her daughter's father, Andy McDowell as Paula Langley, Alex's mother, Anika Noni Rose as Regina, a wealthy client of Alex's, Tracy Villar as Yolanda, Alex's boss at Value Maids, Billy Burke as Hank, Alex's estranged father, and Rylia Nevaeh Whitted as Maddie, Alex and Sean's daughter.
So, Made was put up by Lucky Chap, which is Margot Robbie's outfit, her production company. So this was like spearheaded. And like, if you've read any of like the Vanity Fair profiles of Margot Robbie, you know that she's like intensely involved in all this stuff that like she produces. She's like a producer for real. So that's interesting. We also have Margaret Qualley starring alongside Margaret Qualley, Nepo baby, starring alongside her mother, real life mom, Andy McDowell, which is like really cool and interesting in the sense of like, if you know anything about television history, you know that Andy McDowell is like definitely like a titan. Like, she is a veteran, a true blue pro. And really, honestly, I personally think Andy McDowell giving a career performance, the performance of really her career in this. And so like, that's some cool like nerd stuff to like think about and keep in mind as we talk a lot about this. Oh no. Also, so Made, once it, when it first started streaming, was received really well critically. Like, I think people very much were like impressed by Margot Qualley and her performance. She's the lead, she plays Alex. And I would say, like, there was, like, I think, like, a little controversy. There were some slight controversies. I don't know if it's a controversy. In fact, I would take that word back. I would say there was a discussion, a dialogue. Interesting how the one time you get these sort of really strong, really nuanced, beautifully written portrayal of, like, a maid, or, like, what it means to do domestic work, what it means to be poor in America, it's a white lady. It's this white woman. And, like, what does this mean? Like, and it's kind of shitty because it's like, are white women really living these lives? Like, and yes, obviously, because it is based off of somebody's memoir. But, like, I do think that's a legitimate question. Like, but I do think that's a legitimate question and a legitimate thing to think about in terms of the realm of stories and cinema and TV and historically and currently. And what does that mean? And that idea.
Mm-hmm. This is my take on it. I want to see more of this. And you and I have talked about this before and have had sort of conversations like this in private, and as well as when we have discussed impoverished or undereducated white characters, right, on television and film. Mm-hmm. I think there is a real push in media to portray all white people as having, like, a sort of baseline of education and a baseline of wealth that is not reflective of the white community as a whole, or even as a majority in the current iteration of the United States. Similarly to how there is a push in a lot of media to showcase Black people as being largely undereducated and largely impoverished. I think a lot of times white people go out of their way not to show what life is like in white America for poor people.
Yeah, like, that's real. That's real. It's fair. You know, I come back to an idea that somebody said, don't ask me to quote the person because I don't remember. I just remember the content, which I thought was smart. I mean, I guess it's another sort of entry in this canon of this idea that, like, white people are never, they're always victim or hero, never villain, which I think that's where I stand on the show is like, okay, like, I do think it's important that, like, we have more portrayals of, like, poor white people. What does it mean to be poor in America? I also think that it's kind of shitty that I get why, like, historically, because people, if you're Latina, if you're Black, why you would be like, let the whites have made. Like, that's also fair historically in the sense of cinema. But I also think, like, why shy away from the truth of, you know, our grandmother's lives or our aunt's lives in terms of, like, domestic labor and the fact that in this country still domestic labor is, like, you know, like, for the most part performed by Black and brown women. Like, it's maybe like the New York nannies are not white. Like, they are Haitian. They are Jamaican. So, and, like, those stories are real. Those stories are true. And, like, I also don't think that there's anything shameful about domestic work. It's honest work. I think it's shameful what we pay domestic workers. I think it's shameful that, like, domestic workers are still struggling now, I think, even to have unions and to be, like, treated fairly, but not in particular. I don't particularly think there's anything shameful. And I do think that, like, in a cinematic lens, in terms of, like, the landscape of television and film, in a landscape where Black actresses still really fucking struggle to get good parts, they struggle. Like, you guys, it's not. I wish it was a joke. It's not. Like, they still very, like, in a landscape where the Viola Davises of the world still very much struggle to get good parts, even though you're Viola fucking Davis. Like, it does feel, it feels squicky. There's, I don't know. Yeah, I'm going to stand on that term. It feels squicky that, like, the first really incredibly written made part is, like, this Nepo baby white girl actress. That makes me feel a type of way. I have a lot of complicated emotions. as I hope I described.
No, you said a lot, and I think it was valid. I'm gonna try to like give my thoughts as best as I can, and like try to hit, because you made a lot of different points. I'm trying to like gather my thoughts.
Right.
Like you mentioned, Maid is based on a memoir, and Stephanie Land is white, so it bothers me less that Alex is portrayed by a white woman because this is a woman's real story. It also bothers me less because of the geography. Maid takes place in Washington State. And this is a largely predominantly white area. You know, when we talk about domestic labor, we have to understand that there's many different forms of it. And like you mentioned, in the South and in the East, especially Northeast, we have a lot of Black women performing that domestic labor. But over the generations, it's been less and less Black American women and more immigrants, because Black women, like you mentioned, Haitian, Jamaican, whatever. And if they can't get those, they'll get an Eastern European girl. Less and less Black Americans perform that labor for the exact reasons you said. It is looked down upon. It is not glamorous work at all. And they are vastly underpaid. And for generations, they had no choice but to take that work. Right?
Right.
And this is like the, and well, I'll talk about this more when I talk about the Alex character, but a lot of what goes into domestic labor is either a social or in this case, a financial exploitation of the domestic worker. The person who doesn't have a choice but to take that job is what I'm saying. What bothered me more actually about Maid was the Regina character being Black. Because you said something about white people can be heroes or victims.
Yeah.
Never, except they are villains. They are villains very, very regularly. They're villains to each other, though, never to us. And I really don't like this new form of media I'm seeing where they will take a Black person, particularly a Black woman, and they will make her the antagonist to the white woman.
That's fair. And I think that goes along. And when I said that, whoever said that, sorry, but like when I said that quote, I definitely meant in the context of like film and television, in terms of film, television, books, media, and the stories we tell.
That's what I mean. Like see it, especially even in May, there is a villain there, and that villain is Sean, right? Like we can see white people being villains to each other all day. We'll never see them being villains to us. They don't want to cross that racial barrier, but they will create this landscape, this fantasy dystopia day for Alex. But for the bulk of that series, she is in an antagonist role. And like even outside of Alex, Regina's not a good person. Like she admits to quote unquote stealing her husband from his first wife.
Right.
Why would you want a Black woman in that role if you're not trying to say something about race and class in that? Like, for me, it was a subtle way of trying to say that white privilege doesn't exist because there are poor white people and there are Black people.
Yeah. Like, okay. Yeah. No, you're right. And I think that's correct. And I do. And like that, I feel like I've come across that in a lot of people who are like, yeah, like, but some Black people are rich. I'm like, yeah, okay, that doesn't mean anything. Like, I don't know. Like, yeah, but it's right. Like, that doesn't mean anything.
And say y'all had class privilege. Not all of you do.
Not all of you do. Like, so why are you angry? Like, no, because, and that's really real, because that's definitely like an attitude I feel like I've bumped up against before, and I didn't know like what to say immediately, but like, I sort of like let it ride, because like what I was trying to accomplish in the moment that was like neither here nor there with that person. But, like, you're right. There is, like, this prevailing attitude, particularly among poor white people. That, like, they are just so incensed. They're like, but Black people are rich. I'm like, no, what? Like, okay, but white people are also rich. So, like, what? Like, what do you mean? Like, what are you upset at right now?
Like, even, like, the Lon character bother me. Like, I get it. There are plenty of Hispanic women running cleaning services. But my thing is, like, it's like she is like beholden to and subject to the whims of and like being subtly oppressed by these women of color in her hour of need. It's weird.
It's weird. It's weird. Yes. No, you're correct. I'm so glad we're doing this again, because you're right. Like this is a thing. It definitely comes from like a specific mindset, and it is definitely like a specific like poor white person mindset that they're like all these It is, and it's very subtle. You have to really be thinking about it to catch it, because, and it's true, they're like all these, and like and it's particularly dangerous, right, in this present moment where like we do have a moment where poor white people everywhere, like it's these peoples of color's fault. It's these Negroes' fault. Like, it's these rich, they're all rich. They're all just have all this money. And I am a hardworking American and I am struggling. And how dare they? And so, like, it is, like, I think important. So, like, you do have to, like, call that shit out in its form when you see it. It is, it's imperative. Because, right? Because that's definitely, like, our current moment that we're in. The Alexes of the world are actively angry.
Right. And I mean, we're even seeing it with like characters who are not even supposed to be oppressed, like in the Wednesday series on Netflix, which the antagonist, the girl who's standing in Wednesday's way, is a Black girl. And she's popular and she's all this other stuff. And it's like they took the bitchy white girl character and they put her in blackface.
Oh, that's definitely something we've got to, like, that phenomenon is definitely something we've got to talk about more, because I've noticed that a lot of, like, the mean, like, they have done that. The sort of classic mean girl, like, Regina George character, they've made her Black, and, like, that's a problem. I don't vibe with that. Like,
and y'all know damn well the same representation we were talking about.
Like, I've got to, like, and it's not that Black girls can't be, like, mean or whatever, but it's, like, you're... And I think this is something I've said to you as well, but it's like, I have a problem with like media portrayals of like where we're portraying or we're saying things about certain groups of people that just like aren't real. Like in the sense of we are talking about groups of people as if they magically last night got like social, political, and economic equality. Like, and that's not true. And they live their lives as such. Like, that is not true. That is not real.
Like, it's really like y'all living in Bridgerton, because listen,
you've got to, when you're, you know, you want to be hashtag representation or whatever, but like, you've got to, like, people have a context, like, and you've got, that context has got to match something, right? You've got to think of more elements around them and like what is happening around them beyond, oh, we're just going to make this mean girl Black. And it's weird. And it's, I think it's reflective of maybe an unconscious bias of like, oh yeah, the Black girl is mean or something. Like, I don't know. I'm just not with it. That's the point.
But let's talk about the context of Maid. So yeah. The backstory on Maid is that we have Alex Russell, who is a young mother. She's like in her early 20s. I believe her character's 24. And she has a 3-year-old daughter with her boyfriend, Sean, with whom she lives in a trailer deep in the middle of the woods. That's the first official red flag, is that they live deep in the middle of the woods, very far from everyone else, very isolated. But the show starts when she's trying to leave Sean. She's leaving
him.
In
what seems like the Oregon coast, maybe? Is that correct?
Yeah. Like they live in the Pacific Northwest. Yeah. I'm horrible at geography. Please don't ask me. But it's like it's in Washington. It's deep in the woods. It's a heavily wooded area. If you guys have ever watched Twilight, that kind of wooded area is where they're living. It takes place in the same area. Like, they're both set in the same area. She's living in a town that's like kind of like Forks or Forks adjacent. Not a lot of people around. And then they live in this trailer. So pretty far from anyone in walking distance and even driving distance. She's leaving him in the middle of the night with her child, who is 2. She turns 3 in the show, but she's 2 at the time. And she's driving off to get away from him because he's abusive. Now, when I say abusive, most people automatically, like, the mental picture you get is that he's putting his hands on her. But he doesn't. Like, he might grab her, but Sean never, like, pinches, slaps, punches, anything like that. He never leaves a mark on Alex. What he is employing is a form of abuse called symbolic abuse or representational abuse, where he hits objects around her or throws things at her in a form of intimidation to make her comply. And then there's other forms of abuse that's tacked on. Despite the fact that they're both poor, he's financially abusive to her. He isolates her. He controls her. Later on in the series, he even takes her car away. So there is real measurable abuse happening here, but the type of abuse happening is actually one of the things that is standing in Alex's way when it comes to leaving Sean and taking her daughter with her. Because unlike the states where we live, like Georgia, Florida, et cetera, states where a single mother's child is her child, and unless a court agreement of visitation is already set in place, a single mother can do whatever she wants with her child. She can take her child anywhere she wants. In Washington, even if he had never been married to the father and there is no court agreement in place, if you take the child away from the father, that is considered kidnapping. And that's what Alex is up against when Sean retaliates to her leaving by essentially using their kid as a pawn.
Yeah. Ooh, baby, you knew the terms. I didn't even know the terms.
Let's talk about this for real, because when she leaves Sean, she's got her car. She's got her and her daughter's clothes and a few toys for the kid and maybe $20 or $40 in her pocket. And she goes to the DV shelter eventually. But when she first leaves, like, they're sleeping in the car. They don't have any money. And very soon she loses that car in an accident trying to get her daughter's comfort object, her doll, that she accidentally dropped from outside of the car window.
Yeah. Oh, so when I was watching this over the phone, like, my mother called and she's like, "What are you watching?" And she's like, "I'm like this." And then later, so she started watching it too on her end. So like later, after I turned it off, she like texted me and she's like, she was dumb as hell for stopping to get that toy back.
Listen, I'm gonna make something very clear. Shmario would have been
Shmario
would have been rogue as far as I'm concerned. Like, listen, I understand the importance of getting that child's comfort object, especially when she's in an unstable living environment. Like, y'all barely even have a living environment, for real, for real. So I get it. I get the desire to get the toy back. What I don't get is that actually stopping the car on the shoulder of the road on a busy highway to go fetch the doll while leaving the girl in the car unattended. It's priority, sis. You're running from a domestic violence situation. Your child's safety and your safety are the utmost importance. And what does she end up doing anyway? She never finds a doll, and she goes back to the dollar store to get another one. Like, time is money, sweetie. Was it really worth totaling your car to find a dollar store doll?
Totaling your car than, like, having your kid take it away? Because, okay, so that's the result of it, right, really, is that, like, once the car gets hit, like, Sean then has evidence or, like, a circumstance in which he can, like, proclaim that she is an unfit mother. And then that's what subsequently happens, is that Maddie, for a period of time, does get taken away from her.
Right. However you want to feel about Sean, he is correct. She was reckless in leaving the child unattended in the car.
So, yeah. So that's interesting. So let's talk a little bit about the Alex character and then let's get to Sean a little bit, because Sean is also a very interesting, fascinating figure within the narrative. Mm-hmm. So Alex is trying to do all the things. She's running away. She like bounced, and then Maddie gets hit, and then Sean subsequently takes him away. And then we sort of get, and like, this is sort of like our first piece into Sean and like their whole deal. Sean is an alcoholic, and like you said, like an abusive person and a controlling personality. And in his mind, he thinks he loves, well, no, I don't know. I do think he thinks he loves Alex. And I think in his mind, he always thinks that she's overreacting when she like makes the decision, when she makes these decisions to leave. Because that's another thing. I think the show sort of does a good job of setting up that, like, Alex sort of leaving in the middle of the night and bouncing. This isn't, like, the first time this has happened. This is, she's definitely on her second or third trying to leave.
Hold on. When she first sees in that first episode, it's the woman at the domestic violence shelter did say, like, welcome, right? And then, like, later on, she says, welcome back. So I do think when she took Maddie in the night, that was her first attempt to leave Sean since Maddie had been born. But she does state that Sean's abusive behavior actually started when she was pregnant and decided to keep the baby.
Yeah, she did. So
these are my feelings about Sean. My feelings about Sean is that there was a point in time when Sean loved Alex and was trying to be a better man and a better person for her. But I believe, especially when I view the relationship between Sean and his mother, who herself was an addict, like she was hooked on pills, according to Alex and Sean for most of his childhood. When I look at the relationship between him and his mother, and then the way that that switch flipped and he started being so abusive of Alex when she decided to keep her baby, I believe that Sean is one of those men who has a girlfriend or a wife or, you know, a partner in order to fill an emotional void. And when she decided to keep Maddie and then focus her energies on being a mother more than being a girlfriend, he felt slighted by her, and that's where the abuse came in. I believe that Sean was very, very aware that he was abusing Alex, but some part of himself told her that she deserved it for not choosing him anymore.
That's an interesting read. I don't know. I don't disagree with that. I think that's real. I think that's there. Sean himself is he's a tragic figure, unfortunately. Yeah. As well. Not in the same way, but in a different way that Alex is also a tragic figure. I think what I really like about the show is I'm not on Sean's side, but I am I'm not on Sean's side. I want Alex to be free. But I do think that sometime in the future, if Sean is really committed to fixing himself, he absolutely could.
I believe that as well. And I believe that is the message that is sent in Alex and Sean's final conversation on the last episode of the show.
Yeah, I think so. It's interesting. So to me, there's more to... Okay, so Alex is sort of in a horrible situation because Alex truly has no support system because Alex's mother is definitely... We don't know what her deal is, but there is definitely some sort of undiagnosed mental issue. Yeah.
She's either undiagnosed bipolar or undiagnosed borderline personality disorder. It's one of the two. And it does end up being institutionalized briefly over this later on. And she admits, I know I'm crazy. And obviously she's using the term crazy loosely. She's like, I know I'm crazy, but I'm not bad crazy. I'm funny crazy. She's to the point where she needs professional intervention.
Right. Which she absolutely does. But she doesn't feel that way. So thus there's nothing to be done.
And in her defense, Alex's father weaponizes the fact that there's something wrong with her, insofar as her mental health. Hank absolutely weaponizes the fact that Paula's not okay in the head, quote unquote, to deny his own abuse of her during their marriage.
Right. He definitely uses her illness as a scapegoat for his own behavior.
Right. No, not even a scapegoat. He will flat out say, I don't remember any of that happening, or I didn't do any of that. Your mother's just crazy. And of course, you look at Paula and she definitely is not well. How easy is it to go full throttle on a smear campaign against someone like that, you know?
Like that, right. absolutely.
It was literally she's not in her right mind. You can't trust this crazy bitch.
No, that's very, very true. And so that's nuts. And so then, yeah. And so we sort of see, and then we, yeah. And so then we learn about her, Alex's dad, and he comes in, I think, midway through the season. And he is seemingly better. Whether or not, I think, is debatable, but whether or not you believe that he truly is better is absolutely, I think, up for an argument. But, when we first meet him, he's seemingly better. You know, he's dry on alcohol, lush on Jesus.
And he's got new kids.
He's got a new wife. He's got some new kids who are super into they're not real looking guns, but they are they're kind of intense Nerf guns. And they all seem, and the wife seems very happy. I think it, correct me if I'm wrong, I think at one point the wife kind of even admits to Alex that she sort of felt, she does. The wife at one point kind of talks to Alex and kind of apologizes to her for not pushing her father more back and like being one or like being a force that she felt like. Because her father has not really kept in contact with her. And the wife definitely takes some responsibility for that. She's like, you know, my family was new and I didn't really want to add you and your mom back into that. And I should have. And I was wrong for that. She sort of admits that in a sense. And she's like, we weren't there for you. I think she said something to the effect of like, we weren't there for you when you needed us. So like, let us be here now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Alex not really having a lot of resources kind of goes for it until and is like, okay, yeah, sure, let's try this. Until she does have this memory of, she does sort of recall this memory that's sort of buried deep in there of her dad hitting her mom.
Right, right. Like, and her hiding in the cabinet, right? Like,
yeah.
She stuck in a crawl space while she's on a job, and it unlocks this repressed childhood memory for her. And that's a huge deal because it was never he said, she said. Paula never once said, your father abused me. In fact, she went out of her way to not talk about the relationship because it was painful for her. And she is an avoidant personality style. She doesn't like to talk about things that are too deep, too serious, or too painful in any way. And when Alex recalls this memory and confronts her mother, like, why didn't you say anything to me? She's like, that's in the past. I didn't want to dig up that stuff. It was always Hank saying, your mom's crazy, your mom's crazy. I guess to get ahead of the narrative. But Paula was never the stereotypical bitter ex. She was never bad-mouthing him. She never said anything that he did wrong, and she never stopped him from having a relationship with his daughter. And I think for me, that was key in her stepmother's apology. Because it's like, yeah, you didn't push him to go see Alex, but you didn't stop him from seeing his daughter either. Hank made that decision because he wanted to erase the old life and pretend that that shit that he did to his ex-wife never happened.
Right, right. That's true. That's real.
He wanted to pretend like you were not an abuser. That's why you did that. And I think in that regard, this is why that those last episodes with Sean make me so hopeful. Because it shows that he's, unlike her father, he's willing to take responsibility for what he did in that relationship and how he lost his family.
Absolutely. So like even the cynical nature of Sean and Alex. So let's talk about the cynical nature of Sean and Alex a little bit. So Alex leaves Sean and Alex, you know, brick by brick, from the bottom, now we're here, kind of builds this situation, tries to build like a semi-stable situation for herself and Maddie. And when she does really just grinding, like in so many bad happenings, ends up halfway through this show, The Limited, ends up at this like really beautiful, these lesbians. And she ends up at their really beautiful house. They're renting out this guest house. And she asks them if they take, you know, the government voucher. In Washington, I guess they call it something else, but it's basically Section 8. And so it's like a housing voucher. And the lesbians agree to it. And so it is. And like, it's this gorgeous, it's this gorgeous house. It's like right on the coast. It's like really beautiful. And it's going, and they start living there. And, you know, she gets Maddie into this really great daycare instead of the daycare that like give her the wrong child at first.
Right.
And it must be going well because the lesbians insist that she throw Maddie's birthday party like on the property at the house, like under this, because the property is really big and expansive, and I think up to where, I don't want to say the big house, but it is, that's what it is, the big house. like, come, she, like, Alex should come and, you know, to the big house and throw this party. And because she has been, like, she's built up this trust with them. So naturally, she invites, oh my God, what, she invites this dude that, like, is really intense on her, which we're going to talk about in a minute. We're going to talk about the deep patheticness of men of color. But, like, but she invites, like, her little, like, daycare parent friend, and then invites Sean. And then, of course, Sean then invites all these other freaking people who don't need to be there. And then her mother, who then her mother also in, is an element of chaos into the situation. And a very simple party spins out of control very quickly, all culminating in Sean getting rip-roaring drunk and taking his clothes off and breaking into the big house and falling asleep naked, I think, on the couch, which yeah. then causes Alex to lose her place that she's living, because that's when they're like, oh, absolutely not. If this is the shit you're going to pull. She gets
worked really hard to convince them to take her on the voucher, because even though the voucher covered the rent price that they were charging, they didn't take people who use those vouchers because generally those are risky people to have around. And she proved them right.
I know, she proved them right, which is horrible.
Literally, you came here because the place that you were at before, Alex, was a place where your daughter was getting sick from black mold.
Right.
Yeah, I think after that situation, you would be more cautious. And I get it. That's the child's father. But nothing was stopping you from getting on the ferry and throwing a party inland at, like, I don't know if they got a Chuck E. Cheese in Washington State, but somewhere like that. And then going home.
Honestly, I would have tried to convince the mom to just throw it at her trailer. And then it's like, yeah, we're just going to be outside on this campground and we're going to set up a bunch of, like, finger painting stations. And then there's going to be a cake. And then, like, we'll call it a day.
And it's a three-year-old's birthday party. Why is it going on into the night? Why is there alcohol present?
The present. These are the real questions.
But let's talk about that party a little bit more. So she sees a friend of hers, or someone who she thought was a mutual friend of her and Sean's, the girlfriend of Sean's best friend. And she's like, you know, it's been a while since I've seen you. You said that you couldn't hang out with me anymore because you didn't want to choose sides when I said that that Sean was abusing me. But, like, it looks like you're hanging out with him all the time. Mm-hmm. And friend does, well, I don't want to pick sides. Okay, you don't want to pick sides, but you're picking sides, though.
That's what I'm saying. Like, you picked a side.
Here's my thing. I understand why, out of context, some people don't understand symbolic or representational abuse. Because out of context, it sounds like, well, you just have low self-esteem and you're too sensitive because he's not hurting you. He's not actually physically hurting you, right? In that case, if she had said, well, this isn't real abuse, you know, so I'm on Sean's side. Or she had said, you know, Sean is my boyfriend's best friend, so he's going to be a part of my life. And, like, essentially I choose Sean over you. It would have made more sense than what she did say.
Right. And I also think I feel like I also can understand this idea of, like, it can be difficult. And part of what makes real abuse really difficult is, like, it can be difficult from as a outsider to, like, watch the cynical nature of it. Like, to the point where you're just like, okay, y'all are just, this is what you, like, I think you can get into, like, a sort of attitude where you're like, well, this is what y'all do. Like, this is just what y'all do. Like,
I understand being ambivalent about it if they seem to be constantly on and off and on and off and on and off, especially, like I said, in this context where no one's showing up with a black eye or a broken bone.
Right. Like, it's like, you know, you're saying this man is abusing you, and, like, it's like, okay, but you, like, but it's like, but then you fucking him. So what do we do? You know, I can understand if you've been their friend for years. You're like, I can understand how you can get into a cynical sort of just like, no, this is what they do. They scream, they fight, he throws things, she cries, she leaves, she comes back. It's all fine. Like,
yeah. But let's talk about why they're like that. Because we've talked a little bit about Sean's mom and that she was a substance abuser. And we know addiction runs in families. That makes sense. And we've talked about Alex's parents and her mom being mentally ill, undiagnosed, mm-hmm. and for not a great support system. And her father being a physical abuser who will not take accountability for his past. He won't even take accountability for Sean's behavior later on when she asked her father to testify to what he has seen on her behalf.
That's when, like, you kind of know hardcore the dad is not a good person.
He's not a good person. But let's talk about this because I think I didn't realize until the episode where Paula finds out about Basil, that Basil sold her house, that Basil's not Australian, that Basil's been lying to her this entire time. And we see how Sean very calmly diffuses the situation. He settles Paula. He comforts Alex. He is in charge. He's in control, not in an abusive way. Like, I'm going to get things settled. I'm going to make sure everything's square. I'm going to take care of you. This is Sean at his best. How attractive is that person to a girl whose life has always been out of control?
Yeah, that's very true. That's very true. I mean, to his credit, he handles the situation. Like, he steps in and he just...
Like Olivia Pulsesh.
Yeah, and he makes it all better. Like, you're right. That is extremely attractive. I mean, her mother is bleeding and he wraps up the cuts. He knows exactly what to do. And you're like, huh. And it's because we find out that that's basically been Sean's whole life.
Right. And not only that, he knows exactly how to talk to Paula.
Oh, yeah.
Sean is shown as the only person in the series who can talk to Paula when she is in moments of distress in a way that she actually hears the words that are coming out of your mouth and understands them and responds positively to them. Like when she is manic or whatever you want to call it, he can bring her down.
Right.
Can I say that? When Alex tries to talk to her mother, Paula is further antagonized.
Right. Which, and mothers and daughters.
Right. It's mothers and daughters, but it's also like, we also get a vibe early on that, like, when she is not in her right mind, she'll say anything to hurt her daughter.
Right.
And then we have, like, the Alex character and what she represents to Sean. Alex is a really, really great mother. She's got this maternal energy. You know, she loves Maddie so much and does so much to make her childhood beautiful, despite how they're living and where they're living. And once upon a time, perhaps she focused all of that energy on Sean, and he was the center of her world. She was so in love with him. He was so in love with her, and she only had eyes for him. And she was not out here having to take care of somebody else.
Oh, you know what? Okay, so on that point, there is something that happens towards, I think, at the end, either episode 10 or episode 9. And it really clarifies, actually. It clarifies something, actually, makes something super clear, actually. Because, so, it's when Alex is leaving, really, for the last time. Like, I think she's gotten into this university for creative writing. She's secured housing for her daughter and herself. She's getting ready to go. And I think Sean has not filed that, like, custody thing yet, but, like, she and Sean are having a conversation, and she's just done. She gets in the car, she shuts the door, and Sean, like, comes to the door, and he's like, and he says, Alex, you and me we're the same. Like, that's why we love each other. That's why we work. We're the same. We're broken the same. We're damaged the same. And then I was like, ooh, did they ever really love each other? Or was it just trauma bonding?
It's like, trauma bond. Sparkle, sparkle. Like sparkle. Throw some glitter on it, but it's a trauma bond.
It's a trauma bond.
And as much as he was trying to make it work, because Alex herself says it was always working, until she made it clear that she was not having an abortion, right? As much as he tried to make it work, he made it work because her brokenness matched his brokenness.
Yeah. And I was like, no, yeah, like, exactly. I was like, I don't know that it's definitely a trauma bond. And it got me sort of thinking about, you know, and even, and like I said, like, he's definitely abusing her. He's definitely, I don't know if you watched, like, Pretty Baby.
Mm-hmm, I did.
Okay, so, like, you know when Brooke Shields talks about, she gets with...
She's talking about Pretty Baby, not the movie Brooke Shields in, but the recent documentary.
Yes, by yes, the way. By the way, yes, context, context. the Brooke Shields doc, Pretty Baby, streaming on Hulu now. So you know when Brooke, they get to the part where like Brooke starts dating the tennis pro. I don't remember his name. Andre. Mm-hmm. And she talks about how Andre is, she's like, Andre was very intense. He was very controlling, but he also, she's like, yes, he was all those things, but he was also very driven. And like, we were both, she doesn't say broken the same, but she says something to the same effect of like, we both had, she was like, his father was extremely domineering and he understood that. So she's like, so when I talked about how domineering my mother was, he got it. And then Brooke also talks about how because she doesn't classify it as abuse, but like she does talk about, Brooke Shields talks about how she did something very benign. I think she was on Friends or something. And she came back to the house where she and Andre were living. This is after they're married. And he like took something and he like smashed all the trophies on the wall. He like threw shit and like essentially what Sean does. And it's abuse by intimidation, right? Mm-hmm. And so it kind of got me thinking of like, I wonder, but like, I guess that guy now is like, he's remarried to like another tennis pro. They have lots of kids. They seem really happy, whatever. But it's like, obviously we don't know people's lives. But it made me sort of think about, I wonder if there is something to like how some people's personalities are just absolutely not suited to each other.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That like maybe the way you need someone, like if you're an intense person, you sort of need another intense person. Like you can't, like you need to be with another intense person who can sort of like.
So I do have my thoughts on that. I, like you said, intense is a really good word to talk about Alex and Sean's respective personalities, because even outside of the abuse, they're just two very intense people, right? And I think, you know, for the reasons I stated, not just the intensity, but Alex at her best fills a void for him, and Sean at his best fills a void for her. And that can look really, really good when you're at your best. But when you haven't healed, and most of the time you're at your worst, you might stay in that situation because it's familiar to you, that sort of chaos and that sort of drama, but it's not what you need. It's just what you're drawn to because it's what you're familiar with. I actually think intense personality types like that, personality types that are very intense like that thrive with less intense personalities. And this isn't to let Hank, Alex's dad, off the hook at all. But I don't think that his relationship with his new wife works because he's been sober for X amount of years. I think it works because she's a less intense person than Paula.
That's an idea.
A better person. He just found a person who was, for him, easier to deal with.
Right.
This is like, not putting blame on Paula either. I don't think that Paula provoked Hank. I just think that Paula, more than his current wife, is someone who made her her weaknesses, her vulnerabilities, her wants, and her needs louder than his current wife does.
Oh, and like I guess what's interesting about the parallels of like, you know, Stephanie Laird and like Alex and Sean, and then thinking about like that Brooke Shields doc, is like there's something that Brooke Shields says like that's actually super interesting. And she talks about how like when Brooke Shields talks about how like when she's cutting, basically when she's splitting with her mother as a business partner, because her mother is an alcoholic. And she's splitting with her mom as her manager and her business partner. Brooke talks about how, like, she could not do it. And how, like, she thinks that had Andre not been there with the type of personality he has, she's like, I think I would have never done it. Like, I needed that person who was, like, I could have never done it on my own. Like, I needed that person who was intense, kind of like borderline nuts, right? Who was gonna just go and do it for me. who is going to empty her office of all my stuff and like move it and like change my management, change my agents and do that whole process. I needed someone to do it for me. And so like that kind of, so I was just interested in that idea of like, I wonder if that's also connected with like Sean and Alex in the sense of like, you know, Alex does have this mother who is right. Like a chaotic element. And it's like, I wonder, like you said, how Sean has this ability to step in, right, and take control when needed, when necessary. And so right. She's like, could like, I maybe Alex needed Sean to come in and take control of her mother, right? Like she saw that and she was like, oh yeah, because I'm certainly not going to be able to do like just making connections, parallels, thinking.
No, I agree with that. I agree with that entirely. And I would also add, like, in addition to that, I believe that in their early relationship prior to conceiving Maddie, when she's talking about they were living in this little trailer in the woods and they were just all loved up and they didn't have any problems, that for her, this was like a safe haven. This is probably the safest she's ever felt. So she went from him making her feel the safest and most grounded she ever felt to him making her feel the most unsafe and unstable that she's ever felt. And how difficult is it to realize that in both situations, it's the same person?
Right. How like that's a really, it must be a really hard thing to mentally and emotionally like get there and realize, right?
Mm-hmm. And similar to the mother situation, right, where Alex's mother is all over the place, but she loves her. She, like, she loves her mother.
She does.
And I think she knows deep down that her mother loves her. I think it could be just as easy to tell yourself that about your abuser. I know deep down he loves me.
Right.
That it could have been there for the 2 years that Maddie was born and the whole pregnancy, right?
Right.
That
right.
Have kept her. Like, I know deep down he loves me. This is the guy who loves me. We'll get this relationship back on track. This is just a hiccup.
Right. And so let's talk. Let's kind of wrap up Sean and Sean's story a bit before we get to Alex's relationship with Regina. So Sean files the thing. Ultimately, he does get custody in like sort of the ending episodes. He gets custody of. Well, Sean's whole thing is that like he's like, okay, I'm gonna stop drinking. I'm gonna pull it together. And Sean, Alex's dad, takes him to therapy and tries to get him on track and gets Sean this like carpenter internship apprenticeship thing, which is a much better fit for him, which takes him from working in the bar, which is like, right, the bar is a constant trigger for his alcoholism, and right. The carpentry is baby, like, look at carpentry, like it's a good job, like it's good money, which he says, and he starts going to AA and really fixing his life and identifying really his issues, which is like, he's like, I didn't realize I had been, he's like, when I really sat in, you know, AA and thought about it and talked about it, he's like, I realized I started drinking when I was like 9. Like, you know, we realize that Sean has his own really deep, really serious problems that he needs to come to terms with. And the fact of his alcoholic mother, how, I mean, Sean recounts this story to Alex about how like, he and his brother starved for like half a year until Sean went out and got work and then pulled it together. And I guess some of where that work happened was like where he was introduced to alcohol for the first time, which was before the age of 10. So like Sean has his own like really intense trauma that he needs to fix. And so Alex, you know, for the most part, after her mom's house gets sold by the scammer from Not Perth, Sean and Alex, like Sean as a sort of, not really as a last ditch effort, I think because he really does care about Maddie, files like a last court injunction to get visitation for Maddie. And so this is the part when I realized, like, where at least for me personally, I was like, there is hope for Sean. Maybe not, like, you two don't belong together. this is not it. Like, you two have to go your separate ways, but like, there is hope for Sean. And that's when like Sean has custody of Maddie. He's taking care of Maddie, and he calls Alex in the middle of the night, and he's like, you got to come pick this kid up. And when Alex comes to pick up Maddie, he's like, she was, first of all, I'm not experienced in raising this child. One, two, he was like, Maddie was doing something, crying for some dollar, like doing some sort of regular. Oh,
that episode. It was in the middle of the night. It was like a supervised visitation during the day. And Paula was supervising, and they were at the park together, and she was just being a kid at the park. And he couldn't take it. But we had seen this previously. They had alluded to this previously, because when he initially gets temporary custody earlier in the series, he brings his mom over to mind the child.
Which is like nuts, right? Which is totally nuts. Care of his
daughter alone. He can't. He's not in a place with his sobriety or socially to do that.
And but like,
knows that he can't. He's just doing this to try to get to stay in Alex's life. But he realizes, I do love my daughter, and the best thing for her is to be with the stable parent.
Right. And I was just saying, but like this time he admits it. He recognizes it. Cause I don't think before he like quite was even like, he knew that, but like he didn't recognize it as a truth. And he says something to the effect of, yeah, she was doing some normal kid thing. And he's like, and I instantly needed a drink. He's like, I just needed a drink. And he's like, and I knew that response of wanting a drink when she's doing normal child things is a bad one. And I have work I really have to do on myself. And I've really got to fix myself before I can be in Maddie's life in any sort of meaningful way.
He even takes it further, right? And admits, like, it's not because I was with her. If your mom hadn't been there, I would have went and got a drink ASAP.
Like, he's like, would have done it. If like, mom hadn't
been there, I would have gone and got shit faced. And that says a lot to me, in that I think that taking accountability as a person, especially as a substance abuser, is so much more than sobriety. Because even though Sean is not sober yet, he has come much farther in his growth as a person than Hank.
Very much. Yeah. Like, and to me, that was like when he sort of said that and admitted to that and was like, you're the stable parent. Like, you go raise our kid. I was like, there's hope for Sean. Like, Sean could very much fix himself and get better and be better in like a couple of years, however long it takes, because the like willingness to like admit that and not like hold that information back out of like selfishness, you know, or pride. Mm-hmm. Like, and to be willing to do that is, I think, a lot. It means a lot.
I agree with that. And I think that Alex grows a lot too. We've talked about Sean's growth, but let's talk about Alex's growth. So after Sean handles the situation with Paula and how, you know, Paula justifiably has this enormous reaction to finding out that Basil, her boyfriend turned husband, is a fraud and that he essentially stole her house from her. And he handles that situation. And Alex is really depleted, because dealing with someone who has an undiagnosed mental illness is very draining. And she backslides and sleeps with Sean again.
Right.
She is in a cycle as well. She is in a self-destructive cycle. She knows better. She knows what this will lead to. She knows it will lead to the same dynamic that she has left.
It's true. But she's not thinking about it. It was a rich South Asian man trying to wife her up. Like, and granted, that was absolutely
rich,
stupid.
Rich, hot, educated, and single, okay?
Single, she okay?
She backslides with Sean. And ultimately, I'm glad she didn't end up with Nate. I am.
No, same. Nate is a fucking clown. You're running
from a DC situation, sis. You need to stand on your own 2 feet, period. Yeah, but... sleeping with Sean was definitely the epitome of one step forward, two steps back.
Two steps back, child. And like, and I think what I really love about the show and the series is that it really, like, I feel like I'm not talking enough about like how beautifully this show is written. It's written in such a way that when she sleeps with Sean, it all makes sense. You understand exactly how she got there. Like, even though, like, I mean, from a storytelling standpoint, like not from a, we're just talking standpoint, it's like, girl, like pull it together. But from a, in terms of the pacing of the show, how it's written from a storytelling aspect, it's really gorgeous. You understand exactly why Alex, why she got here, like why she's sleeping with him, in the sense of like, it is and it's everything at once. It's the culmination of everything that we've sort of been watching the series. And shout out to whoever like did, it's just so good because whoever did the series, these outlines, whoever the showrunner is, so good because it is self-destructive. You understand it all at once that it is self-destructive behavior. She's also, but it is like, it's a comfort. It is sort of just fuck it, whatever. I'm trying to feel good in this moment. It's all the things. It's like emotionally, it's really rich. It's a rich like point to land on.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that. Really quickly before we start wrapping things up, I do want to talk about Value Maids, and I also want to talk about Danielle really quickly. Because it did allude in the beginning of the episode of how domestic labor in most countries, especially the United States, is very exploitative. The Value Maid situation, when Alex gets a job after leaving Sean, it's at Value Maids where they send you on cleaning jobs. You got to pay for your own transportation, right? Like they'll get you a ferry pass if you need a ferry to get where you're going, but they're not going to put gas in your car, right? If a client is dissatisfied with your work, you've got to go out and complete it to their satisfaction again. And this happens to Alex in the very first episode. You can either work very, very quickly and hope that you hit all the bullet points that they wanted, or work very slowly. But either way, you're getting paid the same amount you get paid per job, not how long the job takes. It's all very exploitative. And then later on, when Alex turns around and basically starts poaching clients from Value Maids, her boss, Yolanda, I understand being upset, but like, it's not that hard to view the perspective of I need to eat and my kid needs to eat. And you're simply not doing enough to get me work.
Right.
So that was an interesting dynamic that I saw as well because who else would take that job at Value Maids except someone who was truly desperate for the money?
Yes, absolutely. Definitely.
Like Regina refused to pay her for that first job, and it was $30. And you know what? I'm not gonna travel across, you know, the open seas, not open seas, so like a waterway, to get to some woman's house over $30. I might cuss you out. I might blast you on like, you know, Facebook neighborhood or whatever. But she needed that $30, and that $30 made the difference between whether her child would eat that week or not.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
But did you see the side of Regina's house? Can you imagine looking someone in the face and saying, I want you to clean this 5-bedroom, 5.5-bathroom house with this huge, spacious living room and a den and an office and a kitchen for $30?
Listen, that's psychotic.
For real.
That's psychotic.
Oh, my God. But let's talk about the Danielle character. She is a DV survivor who Alex meets at the women's shelter. And she is running from someone who has both financially and physically abused her. And she ultimately goes back. Alex encounters her once after she leaves the shelter, and she's back with her boyfriend. And she pretends not to know Alex, right, in that situation. Because she can't, like, if she tells this man how she met Alex, then that's going to be a whole can of worms, right?
Yeah, I think we see her that one time, and then we, like, really never see her again.
We don't. And I have a love-hate relationship with that story, because I know there are some women
who
never really leave their abuser. Like, they try, but they never successfully leave. But the hate that I have with the situation is that I don't think this portrayal is the best one, because when we last see her, she looks a little bit scared. She looks a little bit intimidated, but she looks quote unquote okay. I don't necessarily like the message that, you know, like if you stay with your abuser, especially a man who's putting his hands on you, that he won't kill you, because he probably will.
Yeah, I'm of a lot of minds with the Danielle character. the Danielle character is another one that kind of stresses me out. Like, in the
sense, yeah, I don't know how to feel.
I'm having a lot of feelings.
Spectacular. Like, the writing is spectacular if I cannot make up my mind about it. But, like, I know something about it just feels so icky, and I don't know if that's my own need to have all situations solved.
No, that's right. It's your squick. No, that's real. Because I also have a lot of squick for the Danielle character. Because it's like, first of all, it's weird. It's weird for, like, them to, like, insert this spicy Latina best friend to, like, motivate Alex to get it together, girl. Like,
they get in her Range Rover and they go try to get that dog, Regina's dog, and hold him ransom for the $30.
Like, that's hilarious. But it's also like, why is that? Like, why can't Alex just buck up and do that herself? Like, I need more narratives of white women pulling it together by themselves. No spicy black or Latina character to be like, listen, girl, you gotta do what you gotta do. Like, none of that. None of that shit. I'm tired of it. Like, these white bitches better learn to save themselves.
No, but you actually just brought to light why that's an ick for me. And it's because of the work that Danielle did on Alex's behalf.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. She's very, like, that's what I'm saying. I don't think just
friends, like, trading stories about their abuse and cheering each other on. And then Danielle goes back to her ex. Like, that would have been, like, I could have handled that, yeah? But Danielle is shown as being more resilient and more encouraging and stronger on Alex's behalf than on her own, which was weird to me.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. That's ultimately why it's squick. And that's why it's also squick. That's also why it's squick that the Danielle character is another woman of color. Because, like, this is something that white people do in terms of, like, this black best friend, Latina best friend, Asian sidekick best friend, whatever. They always, but specifically more with black and Latine women, they're always, like, have this idea that, like, we are invincible. And then, like, and we always have to do, we are always shown in these narratives, and not in just these narratives, but narratives in general, of, like, having to do this emotional labor on behalf of the white friend who just can't get it together themselves. And it's never reciprocal. And that's another big part. It's never reciprocal. It's like, there's never.
And tries to make it clear when they meet again that Alex is ready to help Danielle, but, like, and she's in a position to maybe help her, but Danielle is no longer in a position of reaching out for help. Like, she's back in that abusive cycle, which I hated too.
Same. And that's what I'm saying. It's in, like, and it's like, that's honest, but, like, it doesn't change the fact that we had, like, three episodes of, like, this Latina woman doing all this emotional labor on behalf of the white character. It doesn't change that. So it's like, where are we, what is, let's make, I don't know. Like, I think I would have been better having the Danielle character just be a white woman. Like, I would have felt mm-hmm. less squick or ick about the whole situation. Like,
with Danielle being a person of color, if they could have had, like, a real friendship and not something that was, like you said, like, a sidekick, motivation, inspiration. Like, I don't want Danielle to be a theme to or a tool for Alex. I want her to be a person to Alex.
But, like, I don't know. She's not. Like, I mean,
like I said, that change would have made it better for me that she was a woman of color. Because all the women of color on the show are either seen as hindrances or helps for Alex, right down to the director of the shelter.
That was another one. I don't know that the director of the it's another sort of squick annoyance. The director of the shelter also being a black woman, who's like
that here. I didn't have a problem with. But like I said, like, it's a theme on the show. Every single woman of color either hinders or helps her. And Regina is in the unique position of doing both.
Right.
And, like, the rapid turnaround of her character, like, then having some sort of empathy for Alex is the one thing in the show that felt a little bit forced to me.
I mean, I think it's a... I mean, I'll be real. I think it's definitely some... I would venture to speculate that she probably doesn't turn around, but, like, somebody who's like, we cannot have this many like women of color being mean to this white girl. Like somebody probably had that note and they did what they needed to do accordingly in the room. So,
and I mean, we do have Regina going, like, I'll give them like a little wiggle room, because Regina does go through this major life event. She does get her child that, you know, she needed an egg donor and then later a surrogate to have. She gets her child, and then she's completely unprepared for being a mother, let alone a single mother fresh off the heels of a divorce, right? So that major shift, like, it's not outside the realm of possibility, especially when we learn that like all of her behaviors previously were a defense mechanism for the fact that she was struggling with her infertility. Like, we can make wiggle room for that. It's not a fantasy. It's not outside the realm of possibility. But I don't know why they had to make her so bitchy beforehand.
Yeah, like I said, the writing is good. They obviously, like you said, they find reasons for why, like, it's honest and why, like, as you and as an audience can buy that. But to our larger point in terms of, like the media landscape or, like, television and film as a landscape, it's not the greatest. It's not the best. It's quick. But yeah, I'll still let all these characters pass. I'll still give it the pass. No. So like, what are some of your ending thoughts about the series? Anything?
Well, Regina tries to help Alex and she really comes through, right? She goes to her father for help and he doesn't come through. Her mother's not in a position to help her really, although she does what little she can when she can. And Alex, you know, tries to help herself. You know, she has some pitfalls along the way, but she really powers through. Ultimately, and although I don't like it, I know it's realistic, especially to what I've said previously about what the custody and parental rights situation looks like in Washington. Ultimately, Alex doesn't get her freedom until Sean comes to terms with who he is and the life that he wants for his child. I don't know how I feel about the fact that ultimately Sean has to give her freedom, but I do like the fact that she worked very hard to get to the place where she ended up ultimately. She was the one who got herself that new car. She was the one that was powering through to those jobs. She's the one that got herself into that school. She's the one that secured housing and daycare for her daughter. And I'm really proud of the Alex character. Like, at the end of the day, where she started is and where she ended up is, oh God, worlds away from each other. And I'm happy about that. When I watch the show, even at its lowest moments, it does not take away from that sense of feeling and that freedom and that closure that you get when you realize that she has her daughter and they're safe and they're going to be okay.
Yeah. Like I said, this show is beautifully written. It's really gorgeous. I really don't know. It's just so well written. It's really well written. I think these performances are all really stand out. Everyone's really, no one is lacking in terms of like these acting performances. Particularly the like Margaret Qualley and the guy who plays Sean and Regina and Andy McDowell respectively. Andy McDowell in particular, like I said, very much a career performance from her in this. But
one of the best performances she's given. And I'm saying this as someone who's seen almost all of her movies.
This is what I'm saying. Like, I am from the South, so I have seen every Andy McDowell movie situation that she's been. So definitely very much grew up on her. But by osmosis.
Shout out to Nick Robinson, because I've seen a lot of his work as well. And his performance as Sean Boyd is this, like, indisputably the best performance he's ever given. The range, I didn't know he was capable of it, honestly.
He does some really, listen, everybody really, everyone pulls their weight here. There's no one person that's carrying the show on their back. Just really gorgeous, beautifully shot, beautifully written. And so in the grading of good, basic, and bad, my grade for everything is good.
Yeah, my rating is good. Like, on a scale from 1 to 10, the show's definitely a 10. I love limited series.
No, but seriously, these are our thoughts on Maid. I highly suggest that you check out the series, especially for those who have not heard the term representational abuse or symbolic abuse before. And we're going to keep this season plugging along with a review of the FX original Under the Banner of Heaven, which is currently streaming on Hulu.
If you'd like to know more of us, follow us at The Good, The Bad, The Basic on Twitter and Instagram. You can also follow M at Please Leave a Message, and you can follow me at Lex Moves on Twitter. And we hope that you come and listen to us again soon. Bye, everyone.
Bye.